All right, so let's call the first case, which is Phelps Oil versus Noble, 19-1376, and arguing for Phelps is Mr. Barton. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm George Barton. I'm arguing for the appellant, Phelps Oil and Gas LLC, which I will refer to simply as Phelps. I would like to turn first to the subject matter jurisdiction issue. This class action case was originally filed in state court in Denver, and it was removed by defendant DCP with the consent of defendant Noble to federal court. On behalf of the plaintiff, I filed a motion to remand the case back to Denver District Court based upon our position that this is a class action in which the plaintiff and the members of the class have distinct and separate royalty interests, distinct and separate claims, and that what DCP was essentially trying to do was to aggregate the value of the claims of both Phelps and the class to meet the $75,000 jurisdictional threshold. And in response to our motion to remand, the DCP did not present any evidence of the amount of Phelps's claim or the amount, maximum amount that Phelps could recover if Phelps prevailed on its claims, both for breach of contract and for declaratory relief.
I thought there was something in the record showing it was like $350 is the maximum that Phelps could get. No?
Yes, Judge Hartz. That came later, of course, as a result of discovery. But that's ultimately what the amount of Phelps' claim was, exclusive of interest.
Is that disputed?
Well, I didn't see any dispute on that from DCP and any of the briefing to this court. I think the theory that DCP has is that, you know, with respect to the declaratory judgment claim, that if Phelps prevails on its claim, if Phelps prevails on his claim for declaratory relief, that the cost to DCP and Noble on that would meet the $75,000 jurisdictional threshold. The problem.
Don't you agree, though, that if you analyze it per contract and Phelps prevails, there will be damages over $75,000.
Not as to Phelps' individual claim, Judge Tymfkiewicz. There will not be, because Phelps' claim was for breach of contract, and as was pointed out by Judge Hartz, I mean the maximum amount of his recovery, if he prevailed on his claim for breach of contract for royalty underpayments, was approximately $300 exclusive of interest. The declaratory judgment claim in this case, as it relates to Phelps, really matches up to his claims for monetary relief. And in that respect, it's much different than the Lavelle case and that was cited in the briefs, which was decided by this court in 2006. In the Lavelle case, the plaintiff, in that particular, they sought a declaration for just on behalf of the plaintiffs that a failure to inform policyholders of diminished value coverage and the failure to pay the diminished value claims is contrary to Colorado law. And so they wanted State Farm to have an obligation to give notice to the insureds of the element of diminished value coverage, to evaluate all claims to determine if diminished in value coverage is owed. And it's so that, and what this court ultimately decided is, even as to each plaintiff, that the cost to comply with that was greater than $75,000 because the fact that State Farm would have to change its business practices. In this case, by contrast, if Phelps prevails on his declaratory judgment claim, all that happens is that then there's a monetary amount of money that's owed to Phelps as to his royalty interest. And that amount, as we demonstrated, as discovery revealed, was far less than $1,000. It wasn't anywhere close to $75,000. And if you look at the declaratory judgment claim that was in this, go ahead.
Yeah, I wasn't sure you could hear me. Let me try to understand the claim here. You're not asking them to do anything different with respect to royalties owed on gas sales after some date in the past. Is that correct? Right now, you're happy with how they're computing it. Is that right?
Right. The claim has turned
So the only issue here is whether royalties were paid properly in the past.
That's correct.
Okay.
And
so it's not like they have to change any way of doing business. They just have to compute how much is owed. Is that right?
That's right.
Apparently I'm going to get a different answer from Appley. So I'll wait.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a case. In fact, the period of time in this case, that's really an issue. Well, not, it's all to the past. And there's an issue about, you know, a settlement, a DCP settlement when they settled with Noble. But even that is to the past. I mean, it's related to, the royalty owner's share of the consideration that DCP paid to resolve its pricing dispute with Noble.
Under the either viewpoint rule, and we look to see what the cost is to the defendant, what would be an instance where it wouldn't be aggregating and we could get past the $75,000 for an individual plaintiff then?
Well,
I think sometimes.
Yeah, I think Judge Phillips, what I think happened in Lavelle was that in the Lavelle case, there was all sort of a wide range of relief that was sought by the plaintiffs in that case, including requiring State Farm to give notice to the policyholders and do all sorts of other things that were sort of equitable relief. In this case, by contrast, what Phelps has asked with respect to his claim for declaratory relief just relates to, it parallels to his claim for money damages. And in the sense that, you know, he wants a declaration that the royalties ought to be paid in a certain way, but that parallels to his breach of contract claim. And so, you know, the declaratory relief for Phelps individually is going to parallel to his claim for breach of contract. So it doesn't meet the $75,000 threshold or anything close to it. So that's the distinction between this case and Lavelle of course, Lundquist is the case that really is the first Tenth Circuit case that dealt with this. And Lavelle did not overrule Lundquist. In fact, it reaffirmed it. But in the Lavelle case, because of the nature of the injunctive relief that was being sought, the court said, well, even for each plaintiff, the cost for the defendant to comply exceeded the $75,000. And so if the court does not have any other questions, I would like to move fairly quickly through the other two points, recognizing that our position is on the subject matter jurisdiction, but I'd like to move to the 50% claim. And just very quickly, as part of this Noble settlement agreement in the Holman case, the part of the obligation of Noble under the Holman settlement was to pay both on 100% of the proceeds that were returned to Noble and 50% of the amount of sale proceeds retained by the provider of such wellhead services, which in this case was DCP. And there was summary judgment briefing on the issue of whether or not Noble had breached its royalty payment obligation to Phelps because it had failed to pay based upon 50% of the sale proceeds that were actually retained by DCP as the wellhead provider. And so Noble filed a motion for summary judgment on that. Part of their statement of undisputed facts related to a contention that Noble had complied with the 50% obligation, and Phelps presented substantial evidence contradicting that in fact Noble had not paid royalties to Phelps based upon 50% of the amount of sale proceeds that was retained by DCP. Instead, it was a much lower amount, basically arising from the various claims that were part of the 2009 audit, if you recall from the briefs. And in resolving this issue, the district court did not really evaluate the evidence as it related to that issue. And so as a result of that, there was an order issued, and it was a summary judgment order in favor of Noble, but it had the effect of granting summary judgment in favor of Noble on the 50% obligation claim, which triggered our motion to reconsider with the trial court to clarify that the trial court really hadn't decided the 50% obligation claim because it hadn't evaluated the parties' competing evidence on that issue or made any findings that related to the parties' respective evidence submitted on the 50% obligation. Ultimately, the court did not address, you know, what we were raising in that motion to reconsider. So effectively, what we are saying with respect to the 50% claim is, A, we presented substantial evidence demonstrating that Noble failed to meet its obligation on paying on the amount that DCP actually retained. But the court, I think, misunderstood the claim. I'm not sure why, but that claim was not properly adjudicated.
Is it more than the condensate and the vapor recovery? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, those are two primary parts of it, but not all of it. I mean, there's other parts of the claim that are...
What did the district court miss?
Well, I think what he missed was the fact that one of our claims was that Noble failed to pay based upon 50% of the amount of sale proceeds that DCP actually retained. I think the court misunderstood that the 50% obligation is different than the 100% obligation. The 50% obligation by its express terms is requires Noble to pay royalties to Phelps and the other class members based on 50% of the amount of sale proceeds that DCP actually retains. And that,
How was Phelps shortchanged then?
He was shortchanged because DCP retained a greater amount of sale proceeds than, you know, as a result of the audit, and then it was paid on. Then Phelps was paid on. Phelps was paid on an amount of sale proceeds that was below the amount of sale proceeds that DCP actually retained, and our evidence submitted in opposition to the summary judgment motion showed that. Well, and what ended up happening,
Mr. Barton, wasn't the 50% royalty also due on any leakage or loss? And so if you had greater sales, you had less loss or leakage. So the resulting amount of the royalty would end up being the same, as I understand it. It doesn't.
No.
They may have understated how much they had sold, but that's irrelevant because it's just 50% of the total gas production less what was sold to consumers that Noble got its royalty on. I said that very poorly, but I think you probably understand what I'm getting at.
Well, I do, but I think, Judge Hart, if we presented evidence that the amount of sale proceeds that DCP actually retained, that the royalty owners were not paid on the full amount of that. And I know it's complicated, but that's really what, and we presented evidence in opposition to the summary judgment on that. And basically, you know, the trial court did not evaluate that evidence and didn't really make any specific findings on that in his summary judgment order. So, yeah. I realize my time is running short, my 15 minutes, but I do want to go quickly to the $17.5 million consideration of the DCP settlement. I think I'm just going to go very quickly here. The primary issue is the district court sort of added a qualification to the Watts and Westerman versus Farms decisions and said that in order to prevail, with respect to the you know, having a royalty piece of the pricing dispute and the settlement of that pricing dispute between DCP and Noble, the royalty owners were required to show that there was consideration provided that was independent of the increased production of revenues to Noble. And I would respectfully submit that's in direct contradiction to the Watts decision, which specifically says that producers cannot escape the duty to pay royalties merely by disguising the form of consideration. And this is true irrespective of the collateral benefits the items have conferred upon the lessors. This additional requirement that was imposed by the district court is reversible error. And I know my time's up.
All right, counsel, we appreciate your argument. I think on my list next, I have Mr. McClure. Are you splitting the 15 minutes?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm splitting the 15 minutes equally with Ms. Stevenson.
Okay. And who was planning on going first? Was that you, Mr. McClure?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Thank you. You may proceed.
Well, Your Honors, good morning. For DCP Midstream, the only issue is jurisdictional. In the briefing that was done by Phelps, there was no challenge to the decision on the merits in favor of DCP with respect to the claims made against DCP. So if there's jurisdiction, then you would affirm the judgment as to DCP, which was entered by the district court. So what is the issue in the jurisdictional sense? In the diversity jurisdiction context, the only issue raised by them is not diversity, but the jurisdictional minimum, the $75,000 minimum. And we relied on the Lovell case. The Lovell case followed the brand name pharmaceuticals case out of the Seventh Circuit. And we used the either or methodology. That is, look to the value of the plaintiff of their claim or the cost of compliance of declaratory action brought against DCP. It was the latter that we relied upon. What's the cost of compliance for the DEC action sought by Phelps? And we hewed closely to Lovell, and we put evidence in response to the motion to remand back in 2014. And Judge Blackburn properly decided that there was jurisdiction and did not remand the case. It's important I want to respond directly to what Mr. Barton said. We are not aggregating the claims of multiple members of the class. We looked at it from the standpoint of the relief sought by Phelps alone, and that relief sought by Phelps alone would aggregate to more. The cost of us would cost millions of dollars for us to comply with the relief he sought. And yet it's important to look at the nature of the claim. The nature of the claim against, yes.
Go ahead.
The nature of the claim against DCP was not a breach of royalty agreements, royalty oil and gas leases that Phelps has and other class members have with Noble. The nature of the claim against DCP was a claim that Phelps was a third-party beneficiary of contracts for the sale and purchase of natural gas between Noble on the one hand and DCP, the midstream purchaser of gas, on the other. That's what the claim was against us, that we, DCP, had underpaid Noble on the gas purchase contracts that we have with Noble. And each of those contracts covers many, many wells and many, many, many royalty owners that then, at once DCP pays Noble, Noble then has other obligations of its own to pay those royalty owners. If you look at the cost, that's what they were seeking. The DEC action in the case, in the original complaint against us, was that DCP should comply with its contracts with Noble. So it's that cost of compliance that is at issue. What would be the cost to do all the things they sought in the declaratory action suit? What would be the cost to DCP of complying with those contracts by changing fractionation and transportation cost deductions, by changing ethane, by changing vapor recovery, all of those various things? And and what we did was to find out which of those contracts included wells in which Phelps had some interest. And there were about a dozen of those. And then of those wells, we said there were five contracts out of the total of about 124 gas purchase contracts. Five of those contracts involve wells that ultimately downstream would result in royalties to Phelps. And in those five contracts, we paid $113 million to Noble over about 6 years. And those contracts are continuing.
But to satisfy Phelps, all you'd have to do is give Noble, I don't know, $1,000 and then $300 of that, or maybe you have to give them $20,000. All we're talking about here is money owed.
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think so at all.
You're not having to change your systems or anything. Judge Phillips asked for an example of a case where you wouldn't aggregate. I think it'll be useful to give an example where you wouldn't aggregate, because it seems to me you're aggregating. There's a wonderful opinion. Let me. I think this will be helpful to everyone. There's a wonderful opinion by Judge Motz in the Microsoft litigation. It's In Re Microsoft Corp, 127 Federal Supplement 2nd at 702. In that case, there was a claim against Microsoft for antitrust violation because you couldn't use your own word processor. The Microsoft system, their software or whatever, wouldn't allow you to use your own word processor. And the claim was that's an antitrust violation. Microsoft said, if we have to change our system to satisfy one plaintiff, it's going to cost us tens of millions of dollars. We can't satisfy one plaintiff by just doing some little thing. We have to change a big deal. And so the cost to us is very large. Here, what has happened is there are a lot of people like Phelps who, according to Phelps, were not properly paid their royalties. And all you have to do is calculate for each person, each royalty owner, how much they would have to get. And what you're doing, you don't have to change your systems. You have to make a computation. And what you've done is added up all those computations. In practice, I don't see how it's different from somebody suing, a consumer suing AT&T and saying, you're charging excessive interest on my bill. I only get $1.50, but you have $10 million customers. So AT&T said, well, if they win, we're stuck with paying $150 million. I'll mention one more thing. You cited a Seventh Circuit case. There's an opinion by the Seventh Circuit by Posner. This was an injunction, but I don't see why it wouldn't apply to declaratory judgment. The test, we repeat, is the cost to each defendant of an injunction running in favor of one plaintiff. Otherwise, the non-aggregation rule would be violated. And all you have to do is pay, I don't know, a few thousand dollars to Noble so they can pay the $300 in royalties to Phelps.
I just don't think that is what we're doing. We DCP had no contract at all and no obligation to pay any royalties to anybody. The only claim that was made against DCP by Phelps was that DCP was violating its contracts with Noble. And those contracts, those specific contracts, require a change of procedure. The deck action, those contracts continue. The royalty agreements between Noble and the other folks continue as well. The cost for us, we couldn't just pay $300 to Noble and then that $300 gets sent on to somebody else. We sent $300 to Noble, maybe 1 cent of it, one tiny little cent of it would be the percentage that would ultimately go to Phelps. We're talking about the cost of compliance of a contract, of five contracts between DCP and Noble. And the only way to do that, it's a common indivisible contract, is to change the practices that they were seeking in the deck action. And that change of practice in the past and continuing into the future would cost us millions of dollars. And that's what the McCarty affidavit said.
Why would you have to change any practice in the future? I thought Phelps has agreed that at this point you're paying everything properly.
That's not what he said when he filed the original complaint. And that's the basis on which you have to evaluate things. At that time, they were seeking to us change our practices going forward, as well as in the past. And with respect to our contract with Noble, not anything to do with the individual aggregation of claims by the class members that they may want to aggregate against Noble.
You're eating Ms. Stevenson's time.
Yes, I'll defer the rest of my time to Ms. Stevenson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. May it please the court. Noble settled its audit claims against DCP in exchange for DCP's agreement to modify several gas gathering agreements and also to commit $17.5 million to invest in improvements to DCP's own infrastructure. Now, the benefit of this deal, this settlement to Noble, was the prospect of increased future gas production. And Noble even valued that potential future production to have a net present value of $44 million. In fact, the increased production has even exceeded that, and Phelps has been paid royalties on all of that increased gas production. Now, despite that, Phelps brought this action and he wants more than that. So let me start with the 50% obligation claim and what the evidence was on that. And Judge Hartz, I thought you were explaining the relevant provision exactly right. If you look to paragraph 6 of the Holman settlement, which is the future royalty calculation method, what you can see is it was trying to address any type of gas gathering contract. And what it says, the fundamental principle is Noble's going to pay royalties on 100% of anything that Noble gets paid for, and it's going to pay 50% on anything else. Any other gas that comes out of its wellhead on which Noble is not paid, it's going to pay royalties on 50% of that amount to its royalty owners. And so the allegation here and the focus that the plaintiff is trying to put specifically on the retained proceeds just doesn't matter. We didn't need to rely on what DCP was telling us about how many proceeds it retained, because we're paying on 50% of anything that we're not getting paid on. And just to make that clear, you know, Noble measures the production that's coming out of its wellhead at the wellhead, so it knows what those volumes are. And then it's getting a report of how much it's getting paid on. And all it has to do to figure out how much to pay royalties on is to calculate the difference between those two things. And I think what the plaintiff has tried to suggest here is that it matters how much DCP was reporting it was retaining in proceeds. And it just doesn't matter. Regardless of how DCP was reporting those volumes, we were paying on 50% of all unaccounted for production that we had.
Does that include the condensate and the vapor recovery?
I'm sorry, can you say that again, Judge Phillips?
Does it include the condensate and the vapor recovery?
Yes, it does. Well,
why in the world did they agree to just give you $17.5 million? That must have been for something.
Well, it wasn't just $17.5 million. It was also the renegotiation of the gas gathering contracts. So those were both very valuable things, again, that we estimated to provide us with a net present value.
But we have an audit. We have your audit, and your audit declares you owe us X million dollars for some reason. And what you're proposing right now would seem to undermine the whole basis of the audit. You're saying everything was paid.
Well, I think you have to separate Noble's relationship with DCP from Noble's relationship with the royalty owners. And so, you know, when there is, it's true that we had claims for those amounts against DCP. We thought DCP should have been paying us more. But when the plaintiffs are complaining that they weren't paid correctly on this 50% obligation, which is stuff that we weren't paid on, that's really not impacted by our claims that DCP owed us more money. It's an entirely separate claim. And when you look to the summary judgment record on this, we put in evidence, you know, certainly of how the Holman settlement, the contract terms work. In other words, that it doesn't matter what DCP says it's retaining. We pay 50% on all volumes on which we're not paid. We put in that. And then we put in an affidavit from our director of revenue accounting who said, I've reviewed how Phelps was paid, and he was paid 100% on everything that Noble got paid and 50% on everything else. Now, Mr. Barton keeps saying Phelps had substantial evidence to the contrary. But when they responded to that statement of undisputed fact, all they said was Noble hasn't complied. And then they cited to their entire motion for summary judgment, which didn't mention the 50% obligation even once. So that was the record on which this claim was presented to the district court. And, you know, I want to make sure it's clear. The argument that that Phelps presented to the district court, both through its complaint and all of the factual allegations in there, and through all of its summary judgment briefing, was exclusively based on its claim that it should be paid royalties on the $34 million value of the audit settlement. They made no argument, any other argument of any kind or theory about how they had been underpaid on the 50% obligation. And Judge Timkovich and Judge Phillips, I think you both asked questions, which is where were you underpaid? What was the consequence to you? And we've still never heard an articulation of what that was. And on that record, the district court was right to affirm on that breach of contract claim. All of the evidence was in
ultimately yield more royalties because of the improvements based on the $17 million right. payment.
So, Your Honor, that $17.5 million was DCP's investment in its own infrastructure. The only benefit to Noble from that was this increased future gas production, and we are paying royalties on that. So we agree that Phelps is entitled to royalties on the consideration that we got from the settlement, but the consideration that we got was increased future gas production, and they are being paid royalties on that. Now, they had a whole period of discovery to try to find any evidence that we got any other kind of benefit from DCP's investment in that infrastructure, and they came up empty-handed. There wasn't anything. And, you know, they refer to this provision that says for the primary benefit of Noble. That was for Noble versus other producers, not for Noble versus DCP. And I see my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments. Counsel, you're excused and the case shall be submitted. Thank you.